Hey guys, this is Joe McGee. You know, we've been doing seminars across the country for years. Seminars on marriage, parenting, men, money, and family. I want to encourage you to email us and let us know if this podcast has helped you, and maybe you've joined us live at one of our seminars. If you have a testimony or just want to tell us what God's doing in your life, please email us at mail@joemcgeeministries.com, or you can contact us through our website, joemcgeeministries.com. There you'll find helpful articles and tools to help you grow in God, grow in your marriage, and grow in your family. We love you guys. We hope you enjoy the podcast. I got married for the same reason everybody else got married. I fell in love. I didn't date anybody in school. We were official hillbillies growing up. I grew up in East Tennessee in the Appalachian Mountains. We didn't have any running water. The outhouse was out back. It set over a creek, which means you drink upstream, not down. It was a two-seater. I never could figure out why you would build a two-seater. Are you supposed to take somebody with you? Or you sit on one hole and look down the other? I don't know what you're supposed to do while you're there, you know. And so, you know, we hated rich people. And we thought the reason that we were poor was because rich people had got all the money. So we hated rich people. Stinking rich people. Stinking rich people. And when I was 17, I got a revelation. Because I'd worked every summer. You know, Dad had his work. I got a revelation. I was 17 that, you know, that what Oral Roberts got years ago, that God ain't poor no more. I realized that a poor person never hired me. A poor person had never hired me. Everybody hired me was able to pay me money. And I changed my thinking. I realized that, you know, God ain't poor no more. He ain't stupid. He's not dumb. And half the stuff he's been blamed for, he didn't do. So I realized God's people destroyed for a lack of knowledge. So I realized, man, we ought to start reading that Bible. I carried it around like a magic wand. I'd wave it at the devil and I'd stand on it if I got sick. I heard him standing on the Word of God. I've had the flu. I just stand wrapped up, sweating like a stuck pig, and I'm laying. When my wife came in that first year of marriage, what are you doing? So I'm standing on my Bible. She said, what for? I said, I'm standing on the Word of God. Preacher said, you got to stand on the Word. I said, man, I'm sick. I need heal. Standing on the Word. And she had a few words I can't repeat, and they weren't very Christian. But I kept standing. God says, my people destroy for lack of knowledge. You have to want God. God is romantic. God wants to be chased. I tell people, God invented Valentine's. He likes to be chased. God said, you draw close to me, I'll draw close to you. And some people get the wrong idea about God. God's good all the time, but he wants to be chased. We used to have debates in theology all the time about, you know, we had every kind of branch of thing you could imagine years ago. You know, had 17 branches of the Spirit-filled movement. You know, Church of God, Assembly of God, Word of Faith, Charismatic. I mean, I had them all grouped on the computer. And every time you got into camp, you heard something different. And so we would debate things all the time. And I finally realized, I think this is a waste of time. We talk about when Jesus was coming back, you know, and what it's going to be like. And we've had end times. People wrote those goofy books, the Illuminati and all the Rockefeller files and who's in charge, who's running the secret government. I don't care. I realized that's a waste of time. I want to be busy till Jesus comes. You know, when you read Luke, Jesus said when he comes back, people will be eating, drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, buying, selling, building and planting. Jesus said it will be business as usual until the day he comes back. It would be just like the days of Noah. Said they were busy buying and selling. They were doing everything until the flood came, until that day. And so I realized, quit trying to guess at stuff, worry about the future. He said, you worried about anything? I'm not worried about nothing. I never have been. My wife, she's so mad. She said, you don't have the ability to worry, do you? I said, no, I wasn't born with it. I think it's a waste of time. I've tried it a couple of times. It just didn't produce anything. One of the things you realize that Pastor shared about marriage, when we finally got called to ministry, I was working as an engineer in Sykes, Missouri. Been working electrical ministry for 10 years, and I went to the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga for 1 year, and they didn't let me come back for legal reasons I don't go into. They didn't kick me out. They just didn't let me come back. And so I got a job, was back out of the service, and I got a job. I wanted to get married. My wife said she wouldn't marry me until I had a real job. So finally got a job. What she meant was I didn't have any health insurance. I was running a backhoe for a construction company. I made good money, but not when it rained. So I found a job. I was working as a janitor for Olin Matheson, big corporation, Tennessee, Chattanooga, down on the river. I got a job as a janitor. I said, well, honey, I got a job today. We'd been engaged for over a year. She wouldn't marry me until I got a real job. I said, I got a real job. She said, do you have health insurance? I said, yes, I do. I'll marry you. And so I said, well, then you call a justice of the peace. We're getting married tomorrow. Because the South, you delegated that to the women. Men don't do that. Now, my father-in-law had promised me a church wedding or $2,000 cash. Now, nobody in my family, my father had 12 brothers and sisters. My father-in-law had 12 brothers and sisters. We came from really big families. Father-in-law from coal mining family. My dad from a copper mining family. My father-in-law went through the 8th grade. My dad went through the 12th grade twice, didn't graduate. Nobody was educated. We just worked real hard. Worked hard. Everybody's working hard, trying to stay alive as long as you can. And so of all those families that we had, there was no divorce. Nobody had ever been divorced. It wasn't because we were religious. We just didn't believe in it. Just, you know, you married, you stay married. I don't care if they beat you up or shoot at you or try to burn your house down or, you know, steal your truck. You don't get divorced. That's a sin. Divorce is a sin. And so if you get married, you're stuck. You're just stuck. And so Denise and I grew up in that. And so we just fell in love real early. And I started dating her when she was 16 and I was 18. I didn't even have my driver's license. We didn't have a car to drive. I tell people, when did you get your driver's license? I said, when I was 18. Couldn't you get it at 16? Yeah, I could have. It wouldn't have done any good. We didn't have anything to drive. We rode a bus everywhere. Now I'm old enough to remember that. People think you're just making up stuff. We rode a bus everywhere. You know, if we need something, there wasn't anything called a taxi. There was just a city bus came by. So when I was 5, we finally got our first car. And we sort of grew up in a different time when the world was changing. The industrial age was dying. The information age being born. But we were in love. And people said, why don't you marry your wife? I said, because she's a beautiful woman. I said, that's what attracted me. I didn't date anybody in high school. Now, we had friends that were girls, friends that were guys. Nobody went on a date. We're in a rural country school in Tennessee. Nobody goes on a date. You have something, everybody shows up at the same place. You're going to have something happen to this, everybody shows up. They show up down to the river, show up whatever on the farm. We show up and we just, you know, build a fire and do stuff. And so, after my freshman year in college, and I finally had me a car, and I dropped my sister off at a softball field, and dropping her off, I had a really nice 56 Chevy, a turquoise white, really nice. And I got me a car, got me a good one. So I'm letting her out of the car to go play softball and go bale some hay, and looked up, and this gal came walking across the front of my car, and I was going to be polite, and it's a little country school field there. And so I let her walk by, and she looked up, and she went by. She just looked at me, and I looked back. She's got her in ball uniform, carrying her gloves, and her shoes, and he put her shoes on, yet barefooted like most Tennessee women are. And she walked past, and I was smitten. You ever been smitten? I was smitten in the King James sense. I got like somebody slapped me upside the head. I mean, she looked good coming. She looked good going. She looked good at every angle. She looked good. And so I followed her all summer. I went to every one of her ball games. Now, I had a bunch of crazy hillbilly redneck buddies with me. We'd sit in the stands and we'd yell at her. But I wouldn't talk to her because I'm shy. I've never been on a date. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. So we would leave in the next or the last inning. So I wouldn't be there when the game was over. And so she caught me one night. I did that all summer. Hot summer night, we're at the ball field. Got to my car and I'm leaving before she can get off the field. Now, we've been yelling at her for about 6 weeks from the stands. And so I'm getting ready to start the car, and somebody knocked on my window, and I looked up, and it was her. And man, it's like I like to lost my breath. I thought, oh, dear Lord, it's her. I rolled the window down, and she said, are you going to ask me out or not? And I said, yes. That's all I said. I don't know what to say. And so she stared at me a minute and said, well, how about coming to the house for Sunday dinner at 5 o'clock? Yes. So I went. And so her father and my father worked for the same company. Big old DuPont had a big nylon plant in Chattanooga. We worked the same place. Our parents went to the same church. Denise and I went to the same school. She was 2 years behind me, so I never really noticed her at school. And so it wasn't like we were total strangers. So I went down for dinner on Sunday, and I stayed and had a great time, and I left, and I went back Monday. I said, that's good. I'll just go back. She said, you'll come back? Sure, I'll come back tomorrow night for dinner. She said, okay. So I went 3 nights in a row. Went to the house, very polite, dinner. I'm walking out of the house the third night, about halfway down the sidewalk, and long before the country song came out, she said from the front porch, are you going to kiss me or not? And I turned around and I stared at her and I said, yes. And so I walked back up and we pretty much sucked the lips off each other's face right there. I tell people, people think I'm trying to be funny, I fell in love right there. So as soon as we finished kissing, I said, would you like to get married? And she said, yes. And that's pretty much the whole story. Now, I got back out of the service, and I got the job, and I finally got that job as a janitor, and she married me. And so I said, okay, well, let's get married and get married tomorrow. She found a justice of the peace because nobody in our family had a church wedding. Nobody. We all went to church every Sunday, every training union, every camp meeting. We had something, we're there. Well, nobody got married in the church, you know. I don't pay to feed people you don't know. That's a waste of time. And so my father had promised me $2,000 for a church wedding. That's 1971. That was like $2 million back then, $2,000. I'm not wasting money feeding people I don't know. You just write me a check. I'll see you on Sunday, you know. And so I told Denise, we get married. So the next day was Thursday. So it was Veterans Day, November the 11th. And we had a real estate agent in Red Bank, Tennessee, open up. Everybody was closed back then on Veterans Day. It was a holiday. So he opened up at 10 o'clock. I put on my Sunday best. She had on her Sunday best. And we showed up, and he said something out of a black book. And I said, I do. She said, I do. And we're signing the papers. And I looked around. Her mother had showed up, and my mother had showed up, all dressed up in their Sunday best. And they're crying. I thought, well, did our dads die or something? What are you crying for? And so I walked up to my mother. My mother's a big red-headed Irish woman. She got arms like Virginia ham. She'll slap you into next week. And so I walked up and said, what are you doing here? My mother grabbed me by my collar and jerked me into her face. And she said, is she pregnant? I was floored. I had no concept. Okay, let me take a detour. People said, did you sin before you got married? No. Wanted to. Thought about it a lot. Planned it two or three times. But I grew up in a hellfire damnation, good old Southern Baptist church. And we got in the back seat two or three times. Get to kissing like the French, the Polish, the Germans, the Jews. You do a whole world tour, you know. You just swapping spit with everybody. And every time I thought, this is going to be it. This is it. And I'm not joking. I'm trying to help you. I hope you're getting this. Every time, right before I thought we're going to do something, I could have just imagined, I'm going to get in the middle of this, and the trumpet's going to sound, and Jesus is going to come back, and I'm going to go to hell. And there is no sex worth going to hell. I don't care what you say, there's no sex worth going to hell. And then we got out of the back seat and drive home mad. So my wife and I, we were virgins when we got married, not because we were holy, but we feared God. So when we got married, you know, man, I was having a good time. I was thrilled to be married. So at $84, I had 3 days off, and so we got married, so our mothers were there, and I finally calmed them all down, and we go back to Denise's house, get her clothes, and pack up. Her dad had taken off work, and so had her brothers, and they were not happy. There was no cake. There's nobody hugging my neck. And I had a hard time understanding that. Now, we were rednecks, all of us. I thought, I don't understand. We've been engaged for almost a year and a half. What part of this did you not understand? We're going to get married. We just decided to do yesterday. We're going to do it today. So my mother-in-law is a very wonderful woman. She loved me more than my mom. And so she said, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going on a honeymoon. I've got 3 days off. I've got $84 and I got 3 days off. And so I've got a full tank of gas. And so we're going to drive out a half a tank of gas, spend $84. We'll come back home. And I said that. I'm not making that up. I said that. And so we got in the car. So Denise said, well, how far can we go on a full tank of gas? And I said, we can go about 150 miles. She took a map. We're sitting in her driveway there in Hickson, Tennessee. She took the map out. She took a circle and drew it. She said, hey, we can go to Gatlinburg, Tennessee. I said, well, let's go. So we drove to Gatlinburg, Tennessee. I'd heard it was a really nice place. Now, it was closed in the wintertime, most of it back then, a long time ago. And so we stopped at a really nice Kentucky Fried Chicken in Maryville, Tennessee, and we had our honeymoon meal. I love Kentucky Fried Chicken. I still do. Full of fat and all kinds of bad stuff. Boy, it tastes good. It'll slide right down. And so we had a wonderful Kentucky Fried Chicken dinner. We went to and got the first hotel we came to in Gatlinburg. It's called the Skyland Motel. It's still there. It's still there. They'll stay somewhere else, but I'm just telling you, I was looking for a honeymoon suite. I don't care where it is, what it is. So I pulled in, and so he said, you know, what are you doing now? I said, we're here on a honeymoon. He said, well, for an extra $2, you can have the honeymoon suite. Now, $2, you know, I said, well, I'll take it. And because I got 84 to spend, you know, I'm going to be there a couple of nights and 3 days. So we got the honeymoon suite. Now, I think we could figure out what was different about it. Now, I had to ask the next morning. Now, you got to be old enough to remember that they used to have vibrating beds in the hotels before, you know, Holiday Inn, Hampton Inn, anything with a name on it, just regular hotel, had vibrating beds. You could put a quarter into this machine next to the bed, and it'd vibrate. Well, it's my honeymoon, so I popped 6 quarters in that puppy. So, and it wouldn't shut off. And so It was hot wired, so you couldn't unplug it. It's hot wired. And so we ended up sleeping on the couch. I can't sleep on that vibrating bed. Anyhow, we had a great honeymoon, and 3 days, two nights in Gatlinburg, came back, and we didn't have a place to live. I hadn't thought that far ahead. And so I'm at my in-law's house. I'm sleeping in my current wife's bedroom with her. So I'm coming to the breakfast table every morning, and I noticed it's awful quiet. Nobody's saying much. Because when you grew up naive, we feared God. There was something about being in church all your life. You're not holy. You may not know two scriptures you can put together, but you do fear God. You just do. I don't want to do things stupid. So I noticed they're just staring at me kind of funny. And I told Denise, I think we got to get a place to live. This isn't right. Looking at your parents every morning at the breakfast table. They're staring at us like this, something wrong. And so we finally got an apartment. And a little garage apartment, nasty little place. But it was ours. And we started out. And so we realized, you know, this is good. And we're having a good time hugging and kissing, sucking lips off each other's face. You know, we're making it for lost time. I said, we might not have sinned before, but bless God. They're going to put us in the Guinness Book of World Records. I guarantee you. And so we're having a good time just kissing and hugging and loving. And so that lasted a few months until she started talking. And Denise never talked a whole lot. Except yes and no. And, you know, I would say, where do you want to go tonight to a movie? And what do you want to eat for dinner? That was it. Then we did a lot of hugging and kissing. Well, after you're married, that conversation goes into a nosedive. And so 2 weeks into our marriage, we're really having a good time. Saturday morning, we're both working swing shifts at two different plants. And we had Saturday morning off. She said, Joe, let's talk about our future. And Denise had never griped, never got upset, never lost her temper in a year and a half of dating. Would you believe that or not? She just didn't. And so I come from big families. You have an advantage. You learn what not to do. So she said, Joe, let's talk about our future. So we're eating pancakes. And boy, they were good because that warm syrup. My lips are raw. We have kissed so much. My lips are raw on the inside. I can't. And man, that syrup, it felt good. And then we didn't have microwaves. And we thought, no, hot syrup, man, I'm massaging my lips. And so I'm not talking, but she said, well, Joe, let's talk about our future. And I said, okay. So, well, do you want to have any children? So we came from really big families. Well, sure, I'm going to have some children. I don't want to grow old by myself. You know, I don't care what this, you know, the generations today, they just kind of have goof. I guess I grew up with grandparents that had 12 kids. You know, there's always somebody around to fix the roof, fix the toilet, paint the house, do something, take you to Sunday dinner, buy you lots of Christmas stuff. Man, it's great to get old in a big family. And I thought it was. And so she said, you want to have any kids? I said, sure. She said, how many do you want to have? So, baby, you're the one that's going to have them. How many do you want to have? She said, well, I want to have 5. Well, that's better than 12. So I thought, that's good. That's a good number. We can get all those in the back of a pickup truck. That'd be really good. And she said, when do you want to have them? And I said, well, honey, I think that's up to you. You're the one's going to be pushing them out. When do you want to have them? She said, well, honey, I'd like to wait 5 years till we have our first, until we get our own house. We're making more money. We got something better to drive. So sure enough, January 1st, 5 years later, we had our first baby. 18 months after that, we had our second baby. And we were driving home from the hospital. And I just had a thought when I'm driving home. I got Sarah sitting next to me a year and a half. She's older than Jessica. So we're driving along, and she said, I said, hey, you remember that conversation we had, you know, several years ago about having 5 kids? She said, sure. I said, forget that. I've got one. You got one. That's enough. And so we didn't have any more kids until Jessica went off to kindergarten. 5 years later, Jessica went off to kindergarten. That's the first time we've been alone in 7 years. 9 months and 1 week later, we had another baby. Now, I'm not making this up. I wish I could. That's just true. So I thought, what were we thinking? Don't ever do that again. So Corey gets up. She goes off to kindergarten. And 9 months to the day, we had a fourth baby. And then we had two more babies right after that. We had 3 babies in 2.5 years. If I looked at Denise, she got pregnant. I mean, we were doing everything that you're supposed to do back then, all the stuff that keep from getting pregnant, we're doing it all. And so when I walked in to see our doctor, Dr. Kraft, I thought something was wrong with Denise, man. What's wrong with her? And said, well, honey, you're pregnant. I said, there's no way. And Denise looked at me, well, Joe, there is a way. You know what I mean? There's no way. I mean, we did everything so we can't get it. No, there's a way. Sometimes, you know, those things just happen. And so I cried. I cried when I found out that we were expecting John. I told her, I'm sorry. I am sorry. I'm going to go sleep on the other side of the house. And so the only way I figured, we asked God for 5 kids. God always does above and beyond. If you ask a thing, we got 6. And so we tried 3 years later to have another baby. We tried a lot. I mean, we never used, you know, people come out birth control. We never used it. And Denise couldn't get pregnant. God gave us what we were supposed to have. So I love it to have six kids. I really love it. And so what we teach on basically is that people were astounded that we had that many kids. They would look at us. All these years? No, we found three of them on the side of the road. We just really enough. Yeah, they're all ours. Well, I mean, you got a blended family? No, there ain't nothing blended about it. I guarantee you, it's all ours, and you know we did this on purpose. And people would just be astounded. And I realized they'd ask us, "Are you Mormon? Are you Catholic? Are you Quaker?" I found out a lot about religions, getting asked a lot of questions about. No, we just have a lot of kids. And so, coming from families of 12, we thought we were really conservative. Yet everybody else thought we were just weird. So I realized, you know, after you know getting kicked out of college after a year, that you only get paid for two things. You get paid for what you know and what you can do. And based on my paycheck, I didn't know anything, nor could I do anything. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to go back to school. Here I'm a father, having babies. I'm going to have to go back to school. So at age 27, I'm back in school. I'm taking trigonometry at age 27. Sine, cosine, and tangerine. I could have cared less in high school. I don't care. I just trying to get out of high school, man. They just squeezed me. They barely squeezed me out. I didn't care anything about grades. I don't study. I just show up. I want to play football, baseball, and wrestle. You man, I want to chew tobacco and spit and go hunt something. Well, I realize you don't get paid to do that. You know, it doesn't pay well. So years of not school. You know, struggling when I should have been home hugging my wife, playing with my kids, trying to find out something because I got to find something I'm good at, somebody to pay me for. Became an engineer. God blessed us. We were doing great. And all of a sudden, you know, God started us, you know, 10 years into that deal about ministry. And all of a sudden, my family thought I was in a cult because they know we're going to church a lot. And they think that's weird. You know, every time the door's open, we're there, we're volunteering. And so when I told my father one holiday, we're in there visiting everybody in Tennessee. We're living in Missouri at the time. I said, "Dad, I think God's called me into ministry." He didn't even say anything. We're watching a football game in his house. He didn't say a word. And I tell him, it made him mad. He didn't like ministry. So the next day before we left, he took me out to the woodshed. We had a big old woodshed up behind his old shop. And I thought, well, that's not good. I used to get beat out here. And he taking me out of the woodshed. And said, "Son, you going to be a minister?" "Yes, sir. I think that's what God's called me to do." And he said, "Well, I don't think much of it." "No, sir, I know you don't." Said, "Well, what if it's not God?" I said, "Well, the worst thing that can happen is I'm going to go to school to be a minister. I'm going to find out it's not God. And I'll be broke as dirt. And then we'll go get extra jobs. But we'll make it. I'll work at Walmart third shift, and he's work second shift. And hey, we go to the lake, send an inner tube, and eat a grilled cheese sandwich. And we've done it before. And we'll come back. But I've got to try this. Dad, it won't leave me alone." So years of going to Bible school and finally getting out. And family just, they wrote nasty notes, sent us Goodwill packages, you know, big gallon jars of peanut butter. Thought we were starving. I said, we're doing fine. And so we got out and got on the church staff for 10 years and became a children's pastor. I became a school principal, and I'm learning every day about people, that God loves humans. There are no perfect humans. They don't exist. There's a lot of thumb-sucking, angry, messed-up humans. God loves humans. God loves us the way we are. You don't earn your way into heaven. You know, you got to come boldly to the throne of grace, get mercy up in time of need. Nobody earns anything. It's all a gift. It's a free gift. Salvation is a gift from God. And so you need to grab that puppy and run because God's good to everybody all the time. And so we're on a church staff. And we're still having more babies, you know. So I even got church people looking at us funny. "Is she pregnant again?" "Mm-hmm, yeah." And we have people that say crude stuff. "You know what causes that?" "Yes, we do." It was a lady. We were at a formal dinner in Broken Arrow years ago. Formal dinner, black tie event at Christmas time. A lot of highbrow people. And this lady came up and said, "Are you Joe McGee?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." "Oh, we've got all your teachings on parenting, and it's wonderful. Man, you've changed our lives, helped our family so much." And see, I said, "Well, ma'am, I appreciate it." Now, she's interrupted the conversation my wife and I were having with another couple. I'm trying to be very polite. So, well, it's just so refreshing. She said it twice. "It's so refreshing to meet a man who loves children." And I said, "Well, now, ma'am, I think you got the cart in front of the horse. I don't have six children because I love children." I said, "You see that real pretty lady over there?" And I pointed to them. They said, "I have six children because I love my wife. I wasn't thinking about children. They weren't on my mind." And she got offended, and I didn't hear from her for 10 years. 10 years later, I met her at a church we were at in Tulsa, and she wanted to, and I recognized her face. And, oh, Lord, it's a she-bear from hell. I see you're coming. And she walked up, and she said, do you remember me? I said, yes, ma'am, I do. She said, I want to apologize for what I said to you 10 years ago. Well, ma'am, I appreciate that. I said, you know, it's just normal, you know. So everybody just thought because we had a big family, we knew something about kids.
Hey, thanks for listening today. Be sure to join us Monday through Friday to hear more of what God can do in your life. He's got a great future for you and your family. We're here to help you get there. Make sure you go to our website, JoeMcGeeMinistries.com. We've got all sorts of materials, books, DVDs, you name it, all there to help you, your marriage, and your family succeed.